B-Pod Studios.
This is Chris Gasper.
I'm not the one who's red-faced and ranting, so who's the baby?
And Big Jim Murray.
Takes in your face, sports.
Gasper and Murray on Boston's home for sports. 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Hey, it's Gasper and Murray, 98.5, The Sports Hub. So there's been a lot of talk, at least on these airwaves. But I've also heard it from, you know, Pats fan friends of mine. Like, how come they're not letting Mac Jones open it up? Have him throw it downfield. They got these new weapons like Aguilar. Open it up. Throw it downfield. And you have yet to even see that. I'm irked in that, you know, they spend all this money on that side of the ball. The most that was spent on the two tight ends and Jonnu Smith and Hunter Henry, who really haven't done all that much. I mean, they've helped a little bit, but I don't know. Like, I would expect, like, a bigger game individually from one of them thus far. Granted, only two games, but you kind of played crap teams. Especially, I mean, maybe the biggest crap team of all in the Jets last week, and it's just been meh, kind of lukewarm thus far. I know, we get it. It's a rookie quarterback. He's efficient. He's putting the ball in the right place, but it does feel like I get why people are a little bit frustrated here. They want to see them open it up, and this isn't just for, like, fantasy implications or anything like that. A lot of expectations come with a rookie quarterback taken in the first round, Chris. You know that. I know that. The world yes. knows that. People want to see pop. There's been no pop from Mac Jones thus far. And as we said, and this isn't just to, like, you know, bust balls. My eyes showed me, like, watching Davis Mills of Houston the other night. It's like, oh, he's kind of doing the same thing Mac Jones has done so far.
Minus the orchestration at the line of scrimmage.
Yeah. So are people right to be frustrated in wanting to see more? And what is that more? Do you think we see it tomorrow against the Saints?
I think they'll try it. Yeah, absolutely. I think they'll test it. I mean, look, Mac Jones himself has said he's left meat on the bone, that he can put himself in a situation where he holds the ball a little longer and maybe make some plays. Now, he also said, because I was in the press conference this week, I don't want to chase plays. So I think he's still trying to figure out that balance between taking what the defense gives you and letting the defense dictate to you. And I feel like right now, if you're looking at that meter, he's trending too much towards the defense being able to dictate where he goes with the ball. Brian Flores did that to him in week one, where they were blitzing him, not so much to, like, get to him, but to get the ball out of his hand faster and to take throws that really weren't going to hurt him. And I go back, I've mentioned it before this week, but that 3rd and 9 throw he made against the Jets last week, they're at the 13. We know the issues in the red zone, 2 for 7 so far this season. On 3rd and 9 from the Jets 13 at the end of the third quarter, he throws a check down to James White in the flat. The ultimate no shot play in terms of picking up the first down. And they actually lose a yard on the play and then, you know, get the field goal that makes it 22-3. To me, on that one, you either have to just chuck it into the third row of stands or, like, throw it somewhere where maybe you get a pass interference flag. You know, like, that was just, it's one of those things. And this is where my Dalton comparison comes from. That's an Andy Dalton play. I will take the completion. It will look good on the stat sheet. No one can yell at me because I didn't turn the ball over and we're still going to kick the field goal. But did you really do anything to help your team there?
No, it was to help your stats. And I don't think that he's selfish in that
no,
way.
I think he's
more concerned about being protective of the football than anything else.
Yes.
And at some point you got to break free from that. I get it. It's only two games in the regular season, but I see people's frustration here. And so I guess this leads to this question then. So who's more to blame? Is it the coaching staff? Is it Josh McDaniels that are handcuffing him? Or do you think that Mac Jones is a little bit more responsible? And based on what you're saying here, I feel like you think it's the latter.
I do, because again, I was also in Josh's virtual availability. He said, you know, we trust him completely. We're not holding anything back. So when the offensive coordinator says that, I mean, I'm going to, you know, take him at his word on that. I know Josh is an easy target because he's on the sideline. He's not a player, and we don't know the play calls. But, I mean, some of these plays, you look at it, and look, I'm not an NFL coach or expert by any means, but you look at the All-22 on some of these plays, and you can see that if he holds it a little longer, maybe there's something down the field. People have talked about this Hunter Henry play that he missed him. I thought on the 3rd and 9 that I mentioned, I thought there was a window there to get the ball to Aguilar for a throw that would have picked up the first down. So I think right now what you're seeing from Mac Jones, and this is not has nothing to do with what I've said about him in the past, whatever. He's clearly the best of the rookie quarterbacks, so at least the first round pick guys, right? And I think he's better than Davis Mills, but I just think it's a lot closer than people here want to admit. But he's sort of playing paint by numbers quarterback right now.
What'd you think of of Zach Wilson. Did you thought the expectations should have, you know, would have been a little higher going into that game? After a few minutes, I realized, I'm like, it's the same old effing Jets. Like, this is another kid that's going to get ruined. That's just a miserable, miserable operation for any quarterback that comes into the league.
Yeah, I mean, it was not good, obviously, the way that he played. But can I tell you something that sort of bugged me this week? So what ended up happening is there was the juxtaposition between what Mac Jones did against the Jets. He won the game, put points on the board, was efficient, effective, no turnovers. And then you see Zach Wilson. But, you know, obviously Mac really didn't throw the ball down the field. 22 of his throws were 10 yards or less, right? And so when you bring that up, people are like, well, what do you want, Zach Wilson? Look at that, 4 interceptions. He's throwing the ball all over the field. Like, we're lucky to have Mac Jones. People, it's like those are like two extremes. Like, on the one hand, I'm not really going to throw the ball more than 10 yards down the field. On the other hand, I'm going to throw the ball to the other team 4 times. It's like those are not the only choices. There is a happy medium here. And I feel like it's such a Patriot narrative to like be like, oh, well, you can't say anything negative about what Mac's doing, because the only alternative is this rookie quarterback who's giving the ball away like they're Christmas gifts. Like, come on. That's not... You know, you're being disingenuous with that.
Well, I would ask those people, who would you rather have? Just eyeball test alone. Who has more physical talent? It's Wilson. Like, you can see what it is there. Even if you just watched those couple of touchdowns he threw the prior week in Carolina, like, you can see what that kid's talent level is.
Sure.
I just think he's in a horrific operation. And you know what told me that, too, or showed me that game, Chris, is that, you know, as he kept throwing those interceptions, he's going to the sideline. Where's his OC, that Matt LaFleur's brother, who's Mike LaFleur, a rookie OC? Yeah, that's a great thing for a rookie quarterback, by the way. So where's that guy? Come and sit next to him like Josh is doing with Mac Jones.
Yeah.
How come, you know, so Robert Saleh, I get that he's a defensive coach and a defensive-minded guy, but, like, is he lighting up into this kid or telling him to calm down after the third pick, the second pick? Nothing. He just goes, sits, grabs the Microsoft Surface. He's by himself. Like, it's so hands-off, and it's just the whole thing so Jets. Like, as a fan of the league, you know, it's a quarterback-driven league, Chris. I want to see all these teams have viable quarterbacks. It makes for a better entertaining product. It already feels like this kid's got no shot, no hope there, because he got drafted by the effing Jets.
It would be interesting to see him coached by Belichick and McDaniels. And look, I'm not saying coaching.
Or Sean Payton.
I'm not saying coaching doesn't matter at all. I mean, you know, environment matters. It can play a factor. Like, we've seen that, obviously. So maybe they could iron out some of the wrinkles with Zach Wilson. No question about that. And just to go back to this down the field stuff, you know, because I found the bite that you know, we used on Channel 5 from Mac Jones this week. Here's what he said. There's definitely times when I watch the film and I wish I threw the ball down the field more. But at the same time, I'm just going to continue to do what I do. So he knows, like, he goes back and watches the film and knows that there's some more opportunities there and that there are some plays to be made. And that's part of his evolution and maturation. And it's, you know, the comparison we've heard a lot, unfortunately, I think, is Brady. Like, you know, who does that remind you of? The real comparison for me is Matt Castle and the way they brought him along. So in the early going, early starts, Jim, he's throwing for like under 200 yards. It's like, just don't screw it up. And then you get to week 10 and 11, and he has back-to-back 400-yard games.
Let's go to Andrew in Milton on the Patriots offense of Mac Jones thus far. Hey, Andrew.
Hey, I got a couple things quickly. Is Aguilar ever going to, you know, be that number one guy? I know he never has been, but they paid him to be. I'm not sure if he's ever going to get that way. I mean, Brandon Cooks has been balling out. Should they trade for? I mean, I'm being dead serious. Should they trade for Brandon Cooks right now? I'll hang up and listen.
Chris,
I mean, I don't think they're going to bring him back. And Brandon Cooks has been playing really well for the Texans, no question about it. But you know, he's getting paid obviously a lot of money, and I just think of that, like, Super Bowl when he got lit up by Malcolm Jenkins. You know when, like, a squirrel, like, you're like, oh no, squirrel, don't cross the street, and it, like, runs right into a car. It was like, that was him. And remember when he tried to do the hurdle? It was just just not a good. I defended Brandon Cooks more than most people did that year. I think he was
when
better.
They first signed him. Remember, Chris, we were down at camp. I was like, oh, this kid's gonna light it up. He's gonna be a perfect fit here. Look at all that speed. He now has 1,000+ receiving yard seasons with 4 different teams.
But it's 4 different teams.
Have any of them been memorable? Like, what? I don't know. Brandon Cooks, I think, is one of the great meh players. Great stats, but, like, what's he really ever done?
I feel like there's a dating analogy here just sitting on the table for you.
No, I'll have to think about it. My brain's foggy.
Because he's going, you know, because this guy, like, he looks like a short thing. Like, on paper, it's like, this is what you want. And yet, you know, he's been passed around to 4 different teams.
Oh, right. Yeah. Like, What's one I can think of? Like, yeah, great on the surface, but like quick to post like a lot of God stuff on Instagram, or like those RM Drake quotes or something like that. It's like, oh, Jesus. Like nothing tells you here's a giant pain in the ass like that. So there you go. There's your analogy. I think the caller's wrong about Aguilar. Of all these guys they've spent money on this offseason, I think Aguilar's looked pretty good.
I agree.
I think what? Your expectations are what he was doing last year with Vegas? I mean, that's a team that throws it down the field. It's an established quarterback and Derek Carr. And statistically, that was the best season he's ever had in the league. I think he was close to like 900 yards, 8-9 touchdowns, something like that. Like, if you're expecting that, I mean, it might get there, but it's certainly not going to be that way early on this season, the way that they're running this offense and have the handcuffs on Mac Jones.
Yeah, if I had a complaint about players so far for the Patriots, you know, it would be more the tight ends. And it's not even the numbers. It's I want to see those guys be difference makers in the red zone. That's where they're supposed to make the difference. That's where you're supposed to have the matchups. I want to see Jonnu Smith put in a position to win a one-on-one matchup in the red zone. I want to see Hunter Henry catch a ball in the red zone and make a play. I would say those would be the two guys I would be looking at. But to answer his question overall, is Aguilar a true number one wide receiver? No, I don't think he is. I mean, I think he's a 1A. But when you look at what they have, he's the best of what they have.
Well, college football games have kicked off. The Gasper witching hour is here. So we've probably lost him at least halfway. So as he's paying attention to some college games that we have on the televisions here at the Town Fair Tire Studio, we'll get to some of your calls on the Patriots, the Brady Belichick drama, all of that coming up next here on Gasper and Murray.
Chris Gasper, Big Jim Murray, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Top. Chris Gasper.
Oh my God.
Big Jim Murray.
Give me fuel, give me fire.
Give me that which I desire.
It's Gasper and Murray. 98.5, The Sports Hub.
It's Gasper and Murray, 98.5, The Sports Hub. We're talking about Mac Jones and the desire of many around here, Patriots fans, for Mac Jones to open it up a little bit more. Let's see what the kid's got. You draft him in the first round. We need to see some of that first round pop. Mike in Webster, your thoughts on
hey,
Mac
guys,
Jones?
How you doing?
Hi, Mike.
Mike, what's
you
up?
You guys are talking about down the field. Now, how much time does Mac Jones have to pass? More often than not, he drops back the pass, and his guy's on him at 2 seconds. Now, I'm not sure if that has something to do with Trent Brown not being there. I'm sure it has something to do with it. But, you know, when he was out at Alabama, I'm sure he had a lot more time to pass than he does with the Patriots. And until such time as they shore up that offensive line, he's going to have to dump off to the first receiver he sees rather than surveying the field to see who might be open, who else might be open down the field. Do you agree?
Well, he certainly had better talent at Alabama. I mean that.
Yeah, those guys were wide open. Yeah. He had a better receiving corps.
He did. Like, I mean, it's fact. Like, he had better receivers at Alabama than he does with the New England Patriots. Look, Trent Brown not being there, that right side of the line is a liability right now. So maybe that's why they're being conservative sure. with it, because he doesn't have as much time to throw downfield. Maybe that has something to do with it. Maybe, Chris, this is just my own speculation. I haven't heard anything, but maybe one of the reasons they're not allowing him to drop back, try to find a guy down the field, is they don't want to put him in harm's way because that knee's not right. Let's not forget
true.
That brace popped up on his knee. You know, halfway through the preseason, and everyone downplays it. But I don't know. Did you see him when he got hit in that third down on that first drive last week? How slow he was to get up?
Yeah, he was like an old dog. You know, scrambling to try and get up. Yeah, absolutely.
We saw that against Philly in the preseason. Yes. Like, I'm not convinced. It's just my eyes that he's right. You know, like I wonder if they're letting him be Captain Checkdown and they're keeping everything conservative because that knee's not right and they don't want to get him get hit and then like poof, that's it. He's done for the year.
Well, to tie this back to Brady a little bit, I mean, they've done this before with quarterbacks in terms of not fully disclosing a knee injury, because Guerrero said the knee that bothered Brady had surgery on this offseason happened in 2018 with the Patriots. The Tennessee game on the play where Josh called the pass back. Remember that? That pass to Brady
yeah, yeah.
in Tennessee and
yeah.
it went down like awkwardly. So maybe there is something with Mac Jones. But just to answer his question quickly, Jim, on the balls down the field, again, I think people are thinking I'm expecting a pass that is 29 yards down the field. No, that's fine. But when 51 of your 69 passes, according to Next Gen stats, have traveled either behind the line of scrimmage or only 9 yards, like I'm talking about the 14-yard pass, the 15-yard pass, the 16-yard pass. Those passes are in the offense. And while the pass protection hasn't been great, I think there's enough pass protection to hit a 16-yard in cut. Like, that's the Patriots' offense.
Elliot in Boston on Mac Jones and the Patriots' offense thus far. Hey, Elliot.
Hey, guys. I'd be a lot more happy with the situation if I had more confidence in our operation in drafting offensive players. I think the benefit that you have when you hit on a QB in the draft is the fact for at least 2 years, you're not paying them a lot of money. But I just don't have the confidence that Bill Belichick is going to be able to find himself a Justin Jefferson or a Michael Pittman. You know, there's a lot of good offensive talent that the rest of the league seems to be able to find that we can never inject into our team. So as long as there's that front office issue of missing on the draft, especially missing on offense, I'm just not sure how you can continue to surround, Mac Jones with talent if you always have to go out and pay for it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a good point, and it sort of ties into something no one's talking about, which is that it seems like N'Keal Harry will be back after this Saints game. He'll be eligible to come back. He put on his IG the other day, basically, I'm paraphrasing, like, soon. So it seems like he'll come back. So
yay, I'm sure that'll matter.
That's what I mean. I mean, people are just kind of, but I mean, that's a first round pick for you. That should, at this point in his career, year three, he should be a major contributor. And you're pretty much like, oh, who cares? I don't care if this guy ever comes back.
I think we said it last week, Chris. You forget he's even on the team.
I know. That's what I meant. I was like, I think people are forgetting he's eligible to come back after. I mean, first of all, during Brady week, I mean, that's going to be the talk. Will N'Keal Harry come back? Will he not come back? Will he be able to play? How much did Tom hate playing with N'Keal Harry?
Yeah. How much of a factor is he going to be against the Bucs? Well, with that secondary, who's to say, actually?
That's true, actually. That's true. But that will be in all seriousness, though, now, because we were joking around. Do you think in any way that maybe it ends differently for Brady and Belichick if instead of N'Keal Harry, they pick DK Metcalf or AJ Brown?
Well, Metcalf is actually, I don't know if you've been paying attention. Well, it's part of the NFL ambush. Metcalf, what do you think of his season so far with the Seahawks?
Has it not been good?
No, not at all.
Really?
People are like pissed. He's been kind of like a non-factor in that offense.
Interesting. Yeah, I know they have Tyler Lockett who's like lit it up.
The NFL ambush.
NFL ambush.
So speaking with that protection too, or lack thereof, of Mac Jones, you remember last week, Ramondre Stevenson benched and all the talk was, and I think, well, it's because he put the ball on the ground. Is it maybe because he didn't protect the quarterback? Again, on that one play that gets blown up in Miami, against Miami by Landon Roberts, he gets completely pancaked, which is surprising to see because Ramondre Stevenson's calling card in college was he was a good blocker. And Joe Murray will sit here until he's blue in the face telling you, like, he was the best blocking back in all of college football. Well, you have watched that play. It's like, oh, God, some guys just aren't ready for the big time. Is that maybe really the reason he got benched and not the fumble? Because this kid just can't protect the quarterback, and that's what they need on Mac Jones right now?
You know what? I haven't heard that, Jim, and I think that's a great take. And it goes back to, I remember we were texting a few years ago when they were barely playing Damian Harris, and I said to you, they're not putting him out there because he can't pass protect, and they're petrified of his pass protection. That would make sense. Like, that would be in line with the way Ivan Fears thinks and that offense thinks in terms of, yeah, the fumble was really bad, but the fact you almost got our quarterback with a bum knee, you know, corkscrewed into the ground, that I think that's a really good take. It could be more that than the fumble.
Jeff in Cranston, you're next up here on Gaspar Murray. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good.
I just want to touch base on, you know, this narrative that basically Brady would have came back for, what was it, like 2 years, $50 million, no matter what. I think that, you know, I don't know if Brady would ever admit it. I think that he wanted to be out of New England no matter what. Basically, because in 2019, you know, you could tell he was definitely not happy not having a lot of weapons. And, you know, I think some of those things were beyond Belichick's control. At one point, you had Josh Gordon, Antonio Brown, and Julian Edelman. I think Dorsett were his receivers. And, you know, even if Gronkowski decided to come back, him retiring, that didn't help out Belichick either. And then Antonio Brown couldn't put his cell phone down. So, you know, I think this whole narrative that basically Brady would have came back no matter what is just not true. I think he was really upset, really miserable his last year here, and I think he wanted out, and I don't know if he'll ever admit that.
Yeah, I think, Jeff, if you mean just by how 2019 played out,
yeah,
I think the caller's right. Jeff's right. But if they dialed this back and tried to fix that relationship post-Super Bowl loss to the Eagles,
yes,
they could have fixed that and he would have won.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, 100%. I mean, absolutely. And as I mentioned to you, again, in Tom Curran, other people have reported this, there was a softening after 2019. Yeah, everything Jeff said about 2019 is right. You could tell the attitude was there. The contract, the way they did his contract where he couldn't be franchised, he set it up where he was like, this is my last year, I'm going to be gone. But then he got to the end of the year, 12-win team. You know, it was a grind or whatever, but he was open to a return. If he sits down with Belichick and Belichick says, hey, you know, this is what we're going to do. This is my plan. Like, you and I are partners in this. You know, I want to finish this with you. Then I think Tom's open to a return. So I guess where I would disagree with the caller is the idea that after 2019, it was a fait accompli that he was gone. Yes. Was he leaning that direction all year long? Absolutely. But there was still an opportunity there for Bill to try and fix it. And I'm just going to go back, you know, out of Bill's control. Like, Bill brought those guys in terms of Josh Gordon and Antonio Brown. And you know why he brought them in? They were last-minute patch jobs because they hadn't done enough at receiver to begin with, hadn't drafted well enough, hadn't hit on free agent receivers. So that is on Bill. And why did Rob Gronkowski retire? Because he didn't want to play for Bill anymore. So that stuff is – I don't understand how you can sort of absolve Bill for all those things. But it's like, we're going to give Bill credit, deservedly so, when he fleeces a team like Detroit for Kyle Van Noy. I mean, a total fleece job. Great job by Bill. But then when he puts himself in a position where you have to rely on Josh Gordon, the single most unreliable player in the NFL, and your whole organizational mantra is that dependability is more important than ability, then we're just going to say, like, oh, it wasn't Bill's fault. It was out of his control that Josh Gordon wasn't available and couldn't make it to the end of the season. And they actually still ended up winning the Super Bowl that year. But
that's not...
Bill's not to blame at all for that, or he takes none of the responsibility for the team being in a position to rely on a guy who's not reliable. I don't buy that.
617-779-0985. Couple open lines you want to join us as we're talking Pats here, and of course the Brady Belichick drama, which builds by the day ahead of next Sunday's game as Brady returns to Gillette Stadium with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers to take on the New England Patriots. Coming up next, get ready, Chris. Brace yourself for the NFL ambush on Gasper and Murray, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
That's an aberration, which I freely admit.
It's Gasper and Murray.
I'm drunk, you're gross, let's go.
98.5 The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Sounds like fact, not opinion to me.
This is Gasper and Murray on Boston's home for sports. 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Gasper Murray, 98.5, The Sports Hub. We'll get to more of your calls in a minute, but this time of year, I do love doing this. I got to make some production for it. I would have done that, but, you know, we weren't supposed to be here today. It's the NFL ambush. The NFL ambush, where I get to pepper Gasper with questions about other teams and other going-ons throughout the NFL that he's completely unprepared for.
That's right.
Well, you act like you're unprepared for it, but, you know, you usually have a quick answer ready to go. So, question number one,
okay,
part of the NFL ambush, Chris. Josh Gordon, wide receiver Josh Gordon, reinstated by the NFL this week. Should he get his 345th chance at redemption? And should the Patriots take a chance on him? If not, who?
I think he should get another chance. I think that makes sense. I look, been there, done that for the Patriots. In terms of a team that, you know, should bring him in, I'm just going to go with this because whenever I think of NFL teams that are basically like, you know, a halfway house for guys, the Raiders. Off to a 2-0 start.
Yeah.
You know, they don't have Nelson Agholor anymore. Obviously, you know, have Henry Ruggs there as well and Darren Waller. But you maybe need somebody to sort of free up a little more space for Waller. And we saw Josh Gordon when he was in Seattle. He can be like a complimentary piece. You just can't rely on him, though. But for a couple of games for the Raiders until maybe they straighten out their situation at wide receiver a little bit more, yeah, why not? Josh Gordon to the Las Vegas Raiders.
I'm glad you brought up those very Raiders because they are one of the surprising 2-0 teams to start the season. They have that crazy Monday night game in week one that they win in overtime. Last week they go into Pittsburgh and upset the Steelers. From what you've seen from that team, and specifically Derek Carr, are the Raiders for real, Chris?
I like the way Derek Carr has played, and he can do this in spurts, but long term, no. I think the Raiders are headed for another, I almost said another 8-8, but it's a 17-game season. They look to me like they're going to go like 9-8, 8-9. That's kind of what they do with Gruden. There's still not a lot of real depth on that roster. I think the secondary stinks. They're in these shoot. I mean, look, right now they're the best team in the AFC North. Well, but the problem is they play in the AFC West.
I thought that that said more about Pittsburgh last week. It's been a nice story thus far, but they have this, it's a team I always remember because it's like people buying into this nonsense. The 2012 Arizona Cardinals, who started 5-0, and I believe they finished 6-10 with Kevin Cobb at quarterback. It just feels like he's not a lot of depth there. Do you see how many times he tries to force the ball to Darren Waller, who I think is a stud?
He's awesome.
But it's shades of like Bledsoe to Coates. Like, try someone else. They're triple teaming him, you idiot. And it's just, it feels like he's too reliant on that tight end there. So, yeah, I think the bottom is going to fall out there sooner than later. Chris, which winless team's coach is on the hottest of hot seats and could be out by, say, week 8?
All right, you have to give me the winless teams.
Well, you have teams like the Colts. You have teams like the Vikings, the Jacksonville Jaguars. Who else here?
The Vikings.
I mentioned the Vikings. The New York Giants with the Hammerhead Joe Judge.
Okay, so that I'm just looking at now. So that's my answer. Now, I know that the Mara family, the Giants, they're not normally quick to act. However, I mean, you and I were sort of texting back and forth. That Washington football team game was a debacle. And your guy is a special teams coach and you lose the game on a special teams penalty. Your situational football and game management was terrible. Joe Judge doesn't have a ton of, you know, coaching experience, but obviously he comes from the Saban-Belichick tree. But I think he's getting a chance that another coach, either who didn't play for those or coach under, excuse me, those two guys, or you know, didn't have his look, which is sort of traditional hardo NFL coach, would not get that opportunity. I think it's Joe Judge.
Wrong.
Okay.
McLaughlin Group.
I knew.
The correct answer is Mike Zimmer with the Minnesota Vikings. I thought his ass was going to be fired after last year, Chris. Here's a guy with a defensive mind, a defensive heavy coach here. He goes in there and people thought that that team was going to take a leap. They're already making way too many mistakes defensively. I know they lose last week to Arizona in a shootout. With a missed field goal, but that team has given up as many points as they've given up over the last year and these first two games this season. I still can't believe he's already there. Should have been out last year. The correct answer is Mike Zimmer should be fired as head coach of the disappointing Minnesota
Vikings.
I can see that. Chris, there. I don't know if you've been paying attention to this. This is a true NFL ambush, but there have ever since I bring this up because of how the Sunday night game ended. With the Ravens closing that out on that controversial fourth down play that worked in their benefit because if you give the ball back to Patrick Mahomes with like 50 seconds left, you're going to lose. So with that, there's now been 88 offensive plays on fourth down through the first 32 games played this NFL season, more than any time in league history. Teams are going for it a lot on fourth down. You're bothered by this because it feels like analytics are really becoming a part of NFL play calling.
So I'm not bothered by it, but I'll tell you, I was listening to a game, and it might have been this game, I don't know, but I was listening to a game on the radio as I drove home from work recently, and I had this thought, you know I like to tinker with NFL rules, and some of them they actually adopt, like overtime. But I was thinking about it, and the way the rules are just so naturally slanted right now towards offenses, like, you know, the penalty that a Landon Roberts got, even Field Yates tweeted out a penalty. I think it was in the Giants-Washington game where there was a roughing the passer and he was like personal foul tackling the quarterback. And Field is as like level as you're going to get.
Yeah.
So I was like, does the NFL need to change the rules and go to Canadian Football League rules to even the odds that you won't? So you only get three downs instead of four. I know that's like way out there and
that's wacky.
It's way out there, but it's already in an existing football league and I know the league wants offense and it's great for fantasy football, but it's amazing how slanted the league has become towards offense to the point that it's almost unfair. And so now if these teams are going to go for it on fourth down, how do you get off the field as a defense? So now if everyone's just going to go for it, then maybe it should only be three downs instead of four.
And it's proof again to what a copycat-driven league it is, too. Again, with these numbers, you see one team do it, then I'm going to try that. So, look, in certain situations like Sunday night, again, you're going up against Patrick Mahomes and that explosive offense that can, you know, go down the field in two plays. Okay, go for it, you know, and own it a little bit, won't you, John Harbaugh? Don't put it on. Hey, Lamar, you want to go for it? Like, you're the coach. I get that you want to have your best player also as part of the whole the strategy, but, you know, you got to own that too, because if it fails, who are you going to put it on? Lamar, of course. Anyway, in a situation like that, yes, but as someone who's on the front lines on the war against nerds in sports, Chris, like, I hate seeing this, like, analytically driven game strategy. Like, well, the numbers say we should be, if you keep doing this, I hope it fails. In a situation like Sunday night with Baltimore, I get it. Go for it. Good. You made the right call. But just to do it, to keep doing it, well, you know, the numbers tell us, F off. I hope it fails and it blows up in your face. And just as an aside, when people used to do this with me when I would play a ton of Madden back in the day, and you kept going for it on fourth down, if I end up strangling you with the cord of the PlayStation 2 controller, that's on you. Just punt, you a-hole.
So that used to happen to me a lot. I had a college roommate who would do that, and we had some epic battles, but... You know, if that was happening and I could, like, run up the score, I would run up the score just to try and, like, prove a point.
And if you caught a beating, that's on you, Chris. Yeah. Like, if any literal fights I ever saw break out on Madden was because people kept going for it on fourth down. Oh, why don't you stop it then? Why don't you punt and be a normal human being? Throwing bombs on fourth and 10 and completing it. If you get punched in the face, that's on you. All right, last question here. As part of the NFL ambush, it is something I think you are prepared for.
But
if you saw this yesterday ahead of Eagles at Dallas, their dopey new coach in Philadelphia, Nick Sirianni, who was mocked mercilessly in his first press conference where he sounded like he wasn't equipped for the job, wears a T-shirt with the Eagles and Cowboys helmets crashing into each other like that old 90s look, like, beat Dallas. It's the head coach wearing that T-shirt. Your thoughts?
Oh, man. I mean, this guy's just playing into, like, such a stereotype. And it's like, you know, he should just be there with his Werder ice and his T-shirt. Yeah. You know, just
right. Show up with a steak and cheese, or cheesesteak from Pat's.
Yeah.
The Werder ice. Yeah, you guys were going to go back to Dallas and beat the Eagles are going to beat the Cowboys. Like, throw on the terrible accent. What are you
doing? Yeah, just the whole thing. You know, just, you know, he should be there with the Werder ice. And he should be like, hey, you know, guys, I'm not doing this press conference. I got to make a call to WIPA. And
throwing a mayor of Easttown reference,
yeah,
too.
Exactly.
What did you guys think of Mayor Easttown? That was really good. You want to go down and get a cheesesteak from Pat's, too?
Like, or Geno's.
It's fine. Like, you want to fanboy out. Fanboy out as a fan. Seeing a head coach do this is embarrassing.
I don't want my head coach dressed like Bradley Cooper from Silver Linings Playbook. No, I'm not interested in that. I'm not interested. And to me... The more I listen to this guy and see this guy, doesn't he seem like the offensive coach version of Matt Patricia?
Yeah, he's a clown, dude. Like, this was my question yesterday to open up an Agenda Free Friday. After watching this, I think it begs the question, what's more difficult to find in the NFL right now? A franchise quarterback or an actually decent head coach that gets it and can be, you know, act like a real head coach? Because that's just fanboy crap. I wouldn't want to see that if I was a fan of the Eagles, which thank God I'm not. I just thought that was embarrassing.
Yeah, I didn't. I mean, was there like did he lose a bet? Was there like a joke behind
it? No, he was just doing it for to get likes, essentially.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, just not, I mean, not if, I know I will say that team has been, you know, a little, I know they're 1-1, but he seems to be getting the best out of Jalen Hurts. But there's something about him that says not a leader of men, that's kind of like aggravating and annoying.
It's the visor. You wear a visor, I know that you stink of failure somehow. What about Doug Peterson? Yeah, his ass rightfully got fired.
What about
fired.
Steve Spurrier, at least in the college level?
Oh, there you go.
Darth Visor.
Another of those visor guys. The visor, you can't trust a visor guy. All right, well, so completes the NFL ambush. See, you got through
it. I survived another one.
All right, we'll get to more of your calls coming up next, I promise, here. Long commercial-free segment on Gasper and Murray. Next.
This is Gasper and Murray. Gasper and Murray on Boston's home for sports. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
This This is Chris Gasper.
I'm not the one who's red-faced and ranting, so who's the baby?
And Big Jim Murray.
Takes in your face, sports.
Gasper and Murray on Boston's home for sports. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Gasper Murray, 98.5, the Sports Hub. Is this album now 30 years old, too? It's got to be. I don't know if you saw this all over social media yesterday, 2 days ago, that it was. It's widely known as, like, the greatest release day in the history of music. On the same day, Chris, 30 years ago, Nirvana Nevermind came out, Soundgarden Bad Motorfinger, Red Hot Chili Peppers Blood Sugar Sex Magic. I think it was Guns N' Roses Use Your Illusion 1 and 2. Like, it was just this crazy drop of all these albums coming out at the same time. But 30 years ago, and it's why you brought this up last week. Like, why am I hearing, like, Nirvana on classic rock stations? Well, because mathematically, it's now classic rock.
Oh, that's so depressing.
It sure is, pal.
I can't even, like, deal with the, yeah.
Tommy and Lynn, our good friend Tommy and Lynn. Hey, Tommy.
What's up, boys? How are you guys?
Good, right. Good.
This is what I got to say about the Brady stuff.
Yes.
I like how he's throwing jabs at the Patriots. Because, listen, guys, this is what they did to him. They never gave him a contract that he wanted. If they gave him a contract that he wanted, he would have stayed here. They would have gotten better wide receivers for him, and he would have been happy here. We would have been winning Super Bowls, but nope. Now he's in Tampa, and he's having the greatest old time with that team, and he's going to win number 8 again. And then when he comes to town next week, he's going to give the Patriots a beating and show it to Bill. Let's go, Brady.
Tommy, I would. Wow. Thanks for the call.
I'm surprised Tommy feels that way, but yeah, I like it.
Well, he's on the pirate ship. He's on the right side of history. He wants to fire those cannons. Yeah, I'm with you, Chris. I think this is going to be a closer game than people expect. I'd be stunned if there's any kind of a blowout next week, and I don't see them repeating either. I mean, the last time this happened, of course, was with the Patriots, 03-04. And it's just so difficult to do. And if you've watched the Bucs with any regularity, like Chris and I have, you know how stupid that team is. I just think they're going to get it in their own way. Like, and there's going to be injuries, and I think they might have got fat and happy. Like, you
yeah.
see, you know, like there's that whole thing you can just see
I
with
agree.
That team.
They do look fat and happy. And that's one of, you know, Maz has talked about this in the past, where in baseball, at least, you need a certain influx of guys, either young guys or guys that haven't really won before. You want to change the chemistry because it keeps it fresh. Well, they brought everybody back. And I'm not worried about Brady and Gronk. Like, they know how hard it is to win. But for a lot of these guys, winning that one Super Bowl, it's like, well, I've made it. Like, if I never win again, I'm good. And they kind of play like that. So we'll see. I mean, it's a weird deal. They've won, 10 in a row they've won?
Yeah.
And they've scored 30-plus points in 9 straight games, which is an NFL record. But when you watch the – doesn't the whole thing feel like – it's like when you go to the circus and you watch, like, the high wire act performers or you watch, like, you know, the acrobats. And the whole thing – feels like that to me.
Yeah. Oh, no. There's not...
at any moment, there could be a complete calamity.
The only one on the beam is Brady. Like, yeah. The rest of it just feels like a complete
S-show. It's like a trapeze act, and you're like, are they going to catch you? Is that hand going to connect? Is that person going to fall? It's just like, I don't know.
Adam in Rhode Island on some of the comments from Tom Brady Sr. this week. Hey, Adam.
Hey, guys. I listened to both interviews or talks that Tom Brady's father called up, and the first one, he did say, yeah, I was going to kick their ass 4-0, but he was kind of complimentary to the Patriots, saying they're a Patriot team. We like the Patriots, except when Tom plays them. The second call, it was total, like, venom. So I think there's going to be something in this book that really went south, you know?
Well, I would hope so, because if there isn't, Chris, they're going to look kind of stupid. You know, look, I've chosen my side, right side, Tom Brady. But if there's really nothing in that Seth Wickersham book that comes out in a couple of weeks that even we can dig out and make something out of. And it's just like, well, you're still angry about a few years ago. Like, you went down there and won. So, like, what's the issue, dude? Like, if it's going to look incredibly petty if there's not another nugget in there that makes, you know, you can understand why there's been this, I think, this calculated assault from the Brady side of things over the last handful of months.
I mean, what's interesting is the more and more you hear about the Wickersham book, it seems like it's a pro-Belichick book. That it's if the book The Dynasty was Robert Kraft's version of what happened, it feels like this Wickersham book is more Belichick's version.
Yeah,
interesting.
I believe that because I don't know if you've heard some of the appearances, the weekly appearances Bert Breer of MMQB does on Zolak and Bertrand. They were peppering him about it because he's had the book, he's read it, can't talk about it. And they were like, well, how's it make Bill look? And he was like, well, it makes Bill look really good. Well, how's it make Brady look? And he went,
yeah,
it's like,
that's,
oh.
That's what you're hearing.
Yeah.
And this is another part of this thing that's going to be really interesting is that this book drops after the Brady Belichick game, after a week from tomorrow. The book, and it's like, obviously the book could have dropped before that. You know, they must have reached some agreement that they would not have the book drop during this week because it would be a massive distraction. But right, so whatever happens with Brady Belichick, whoever wins the game, whatever happens, we're going to go from that and segue right into this book. And dissecting this book.
Is this Serena? Am I saying this correctly? You're next here on Gaspar Murray. Hello. Hello, Serena.
Hello.
Hi. Hi, go ahead.
Okay, so the whole Brady Belichick thing. So here's a guy who dedicated his career. Like, I mean, took pay cuts, did whatever he could do. So the best of this team, over 20 years, came in, really was dedicated. And you don't find that in sports today. You don't find it because people, well, although we all know that Brady's not worried about money. His wife makes more than him. But anyway, so all of that he did. And then the one time, the very one time that he asked for a certain amount, like they have a problem giving it to him. And I'm sorry. So this whole last whole year, I absolutely rooted for him, as I did Peyton Manning when Peyton, Indianapolis, when he had the surgery and they let him go, when he went over to Denver and won the Super Bowl. I don't think I've ever been so happy for somebody to win a Super Bowl. God willing, this Sunday I'll be there and I'll have Brady everything on. I don't understand, and I get it's a business, and, you know, you have to – but how do you let a Tom Brady go? That hasn't worked out too well for them now, has it?
It certainly hasn't, Serena.
Yeah, Serena sounds like a true believer. She's a Brady true believer.
And have fun at that game.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, you know, they just – it's not as jacked up price-wise as it was just a few weeks ago. You know?
Really?
Because I remember looking at so I'm looking at the secondary market that I think most people use to buy tickets. And, you know, just a few weeks ago, Chris, I think the lowest price to get in was just hovering around $1,000. Okay. Looking here, like, it's cut in half. So,
wow.
Or there's actually, you can get in upper corner, 339, just over $400.
Yeah, so $400 to sit there and wait in line with Felger and see if his digital tickets scan or not.
So I don't know what's happened here. Maybe people are sick of the narrative. Maybe people want more out of the Patriots. They expected more out of Mac Jones. But I don't know. It does seem like the buzz has died down a little bit. If you held on to those tickets to the last minute thinking like, yeah, I'm really going to cash in. Whoops, you screwed up.
It's like, oh, here's all the Christmas gifts for the kids on these tickets, you know?
Right.
But just to play off quickly, you know, sort of what, I know we have to go to break, but just off, you know, sort of what Serena was saying there, that was something I wanted to say to Maz yesterday. He's like, Brady became high maintenance. And it was like, no, Brady was always super low maintenance. And then he just became like regular NFL quarterback maintenance. And the Patriots were like, oh, this is high maintenance. Like, this guy's changed. We can't deal with this. I don't think they fully appreciate it for somebody of Brady's stature, accomplishments, and ability, just how low maintenance and humble he really was and how rare that is, not just in the NFL, but in pro sports.
He wasn't asking for much, but he realized he became self-actualized and realized his worth when Giselle came into the picture, and rightfully so, too. I mean, here's a woman that's like those supermodels. When she probably heard about his contracts,
oh.
Chris, she was like, wait, what? And the money's not guaranteed? Are you an idiot? Yeah, like she's ever of a completely different world where like they're getting massive amounts of money guaranteed. And she knows, like, looking at this, like, well, you're the more important piece and they want to dangle incentives in front of you after you were just named the most valuable player. What the hell's wrong with you? And what's wrong with them?
I mean, in fairness to Giselle here, she grew up in Brazil without the NFL, and even she realized very quickly that Brady was the more important piece.
Yeah.
Without any experience with the game.
All right, we'll continue to mix in your calls here as it pertains to next week's Giant.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911, and we'll send the link straight to your phone.